on today's episode of the Law of Tech podcast.
There's this whole push for diversity, right? And diversity often gets construed as things that are gender or race. And it doesn't matter having these different races, different genders, and it's a whole bunch of people that have trained to all think the same way. That's not truly diverse. It's having people that have different backgrounds, different experiences, different ways of thinking about things that is going to give you the best opportunity to come up with the right solution.
Like having a multidisciplinary team and asking all of the stakeholders for input. So I would approach the challenge from my perspective, but the moment I pull in Chris, he has a different perspective and can add his knowledge and expertise. And then we pull in the lawyer and go, okay, but some aspect of this challenge is your challenge. So how can we make it better for you? And then some aspect of this challenge is the consumer's challenge. And how can we make it better for them? So having that multidisciplinary team and getting all of the perspectives. So starting with a proper stakeholder analysis, let's get technical, and getting all of the the relevant people around the table always makes for a better quality product.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Law of Tech podcast. I'm your host, Hadassah Drugarch. As always, I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Marco. It's great to have you on again. And for this episode, we are joined by two incredible people. We are joined on the one hand by Chris Williams. And for this episode, we're also joined by Liesel van Ziel. I would definitely leave the floor to you, Liesel, to talk more about yourself. And the same goes for you, Chris, to give an intro on your end. So I'm going to leave the floor to you both. We're going to be talking about legal design, legal tech, user centricity. It's going to be all of that good juice. So let me hand the mic to both of you, maybe starting with you, Liesel, just as like a fresh start to the episode.
Thank you so much, Hadassah. I am an information designer. I didn't start out wanting to be an information designer. I wanted to be a psychologist and help people find themselves. And then in my final year, in my final year of undergrad study, all the professors had an opportunity to come and pitch their courses, their postgrad courses to us. And one professor walked in and all he said was, "The world needs you." And I was like, "Yes, I'm there. What are you teaching?" Turns out it was information design. Went into that field and I think it is absolutely the perfect place for me to be. It combines all of that like focus on human centricity and on helping people find themselves, but find, you know, the information that they need and access services and, you know, build relationships. And so from information design, it was kind of a logical move into plain language and design, and that has turned into legal design. And so it's been a really incredible journey to hear. And I'm so excited to be here today. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Definitely. No, thank you. I'm very curious to hear more about your story, especially on the legal side of things. I love how like the, you know, like legal is both to both of you, I think. Before you start in this field, at least, like a fresh new field. So let's definitely dig deeper into that later. Chris,
yeah, what about you? To carry on from your point is I never intended to be in the legal space. I actually, after graduating, I focused very much on getting into the financial world, worked in foreign exchange, investment banking, and eventually moved towards financial advisory. I had got into the industry from a point of seeing it as a way to be successful using a skill set that I had, but also that I had seen there was a great opportunity to do it in a much more ethical, responsible, in a better way for people. I often saw financial advisors, for instance, trying to sell the products that were paying them the biggest commissions up front. And it wasn't actually about helping that person with their financial advice or their financial situation. Subsequently, I decided to after being in the industry and trying to affect this change in my little world and really struggling with it, I made the decision to kind of jump the fence and join the tech world and see if I could come back with greater knowledge of tech, because as much as it isn't all about tech, it's becoming more and more of a part of everything that we do. And I subsequently joined Betty Blocks, really got into the no and low code space, focusing on innovation, really from that sparking the idea to getting people to use this beautiful thing that you've created. And I've spent the last sort of 3 years diving headfirst into the legal space as a result of joining Betty Blocks. And yeah, that's where I kind of find myself now, is working with legal professionals all the time in the legal space, headfirst, trying my best to help us use technology in a positive way.
Let's maybe start, and I'm going to take on Marco's role for this. Let's go back to like the basics, I would say, looking at the broader topic. Can you maybe touch upon and talk more about this kind of intersection of, on the one hand, technology for law and user centricity, so this design thinking approach, where do they kind of come together? Maybe you also have some practical examples of that.
From a legal design perspective and information design perspective, users always have to come first, right? So if you're solving a problem, you've got to know who you're solving the problem for and really understand that audience and understand that group. And often we see digital solutions that are just kind of creating the faster caterpillars. So instead of having that metamorphosis into a butterfly, you're just creating a faster caterpillar where you're trying to go paperless. But the signature process is still the same. We're still requiring people to print things and sign them in triplicate and file them. Or we're still requiring someone to keep following up. And we're not considering the person that we're trying to solve the problem for. We're just kind of going, ooh, tech. Whereas if you really take the time and get to know the audience, I think that there are so many opportunities to implement tech in a really useful way. But the first part has to start with understanding the audience and the problem.
Yeah, I can fully agree with that. For me, at the end of the day, you've got to think about what we're doing, who is it actually for? And for instance, legal services are not for lawyers, it's for everyday people, right? So you've got to make sure that you are delivering the best service for the person or the people that you are actually supposed to be. To your point about technology can make the faster caterpillar, if the situation is that we've got a caterpillar, I want the faster caterpillar, but it still leaves the core problem, right? It's the solution is not really addressing the people that the service or that it's built for. It's all about trying to get those end users and the people that are experiencing the service or an inefficiency or a problem or whatever it is, the people that are actually going through the experience, getting them involved in developing the solution. Because no one knows the problem better than the person experiencing it. No one knows how they want to receive legal services or be able to access legal services than those that are on the ground and are trying to find them themselves. Yes, the legal professional in this context knows how best to deliver that information. And that's where, for instance, legal design, I think, plays a very critical role, because the lawyer does understand the knowledge better than the everyday person. But you're still going to make it something that the everyday person can understand.
I think you make a good point. And I think that this conversation and the way that you've set up the session is also a good illustration of that. Like having a multidisciplinary team and asking all of the stakeholders for input. So I would approach the challenge from my perspective. But the moment I pull in Chris, he has a different perspective and can add his knowledge and expertise. And then we pull in the lawyer and go, okay, but some aspect of this challenge is your challenge. So how can we make it better for you? And then some aspect of this challenge is the consumer's challenge. And how can we make it better for them? So having that multidisciplinary team and getting all of the perspectives. So starting with a proper stakeholder analysis, let's get technical, and getting all of the the relevant people around the table always makes for a better quality product.
Yeah. I've had the conversation with Marco. We've spoken it before around there's this whole push for diversity, right? And diversity often gets construed as things that are gender or race. And it doesn't matter having these different races, different genders, and it's a whole bunch of people that have trained to all think the same way. That's not truly diverse. It's having people that have different backgrounds, different experiences, different ways of thinking about things that is going to give you the best opportunity to come up with the right solution.
Yeah, you actually answered exactly the question I wanted to ask in the first place. No, I was going to ask, where do you start with understanding who this user is? But that is key, definitely. And what's interesting is we have actually an episode going out this week with Magdalena Koenig. By the time that this will go out, that episode will already have been published. And the final question, we will get to that at the end, so I don't want to give away too much, although Chris already knows what our Law of Tech special is. But but essentially, a question that we got
that's a
from
special
that
surprise for Lidl, actually.
Nervous.
Yeah, so... How do you get like this diverse team, right, on a broader level? How do you create this alignment between those different stakeholders to get to that point where you're like, hey, okay, now we can get to understand what this problem is. Now we can actually say, hey, we have this problem. Now let's think of how we want to proceed from there. So maybe you guys actually have an idea. We were like, well, essentially what we're trying to do is get people together to talk about this, but we don't have the answer for you. So I'm curious, do you have the answer or an answer to that question of how to create this alignment between stakeholders when you're having these conversations in the first place?
Yeah, so I think one of the things, so start off this way, I definitely don't have the answer, but one of the key and I think very first steps is exactly what you mentioned, right? Is making sure that there's communication around it, so if I can actually get people in the same room or in the same space talking about it together, I think that automatically starts to generate alignment. Or if it doesn't, it starts to identify other things that you need to address. But that communication should draw alignment. And I think that there's also a thing here where, for me, it's having a proper process in place of how do we deal with these things. So, for instance, in the work that I do on a day-to-day basis, we focus on the innovation lifecycle. So from capturing the spark, you know, that initial idea, to how do you get buy-in from your colleagues, how do you get sponsorship from the leadership to take this idea forward, go through the whole process of iterating it, getting the feedback from users, and then getting people to use it. The foundational part, it really is at that start, where how are we capturing the idea and taking it through a process that gets us to a point where we all are on the same page. We understand the value that it's going to bring. And that should, in theory, drive that alignment.
Yeah, I want to agree there. And I also just think that creating the opportunity for this conversation is sometimes a very novel thing. So when we work with companies where let's say we're redesigning a set of customer-facing terms and conditions or a policy or whatever, and we get legal and marketing and sometimes if they'll make the time for it, the whole C-suite in the same room together and maybe even distribution and whoever, everybody who has a stake in this document or is affected by it or can add something. They're all in the same room together, often for the first time talking about this problem. And now they start hearing each other. Now suddenly distribution hears sales. And they're like, oh, I didn't realize that. They learn something new. And then by the end of the session, look, you need a good facilitator. You need someone who can go, guys, we need to focus this and bring them back all the time. Because often when you give someone a platform to talk about their problems, it can carry on. So you need a good facilitator. But just giving them the opportunity, they will speak and, you know, write down everything, take notes, keep reflecting those notes back to the group and back to the audience, and that alignment will come.
It's so true. And it's literally having getting those different stakeholders into a room and letting them talk about it. I gave them an example in a previous conversation about a CIO that was working for one of the UK airports. And he was trying to, you know, drive innovation within the airport. And what he was saying is, it's all good and well that I can speak to the managers and speak to all these different people around, you know, what problems are going on in what areas. But when it comes to, for instance, how we are handling things in the security line, I want to speak to the person that's standing in the security line. I don't want other people to tell me their impression of how things are going. I want that person that's on the ground experiencing, I want them to tell me. And it's making sure that it's an accessible conversation from the person at the bottom level to the CEO or the managing partner, making sure that everyone has a platform to get involved in that conversation.
Yeah. Marco, like, I know we talk about this so much, right?
Yes. Indeed. But it seems too nice to be true to hear from both of them. They're very too much aligned for my taste. So I'm gonna try to be the devil's advocate now and try.
I was waiting for it.
we South Africans stick together.
So apparently, so far as I can see, let's say both designers and technologists, in theory, they seem pretty much aligned as far as we can hear that. So I mean, Liesl's reasoning seems really matching with Chris. So if they match with each other, what's the problem out there? Well, why there's still some gap? So let's try to investigate that further. So my question is about time. Let me narrow it down. So let's try to picture a real case scenario. Okay, so we understand the problem. We're trying to frame the problem together. We also introduce the concept of meeting together with other people in the same room, the so-called stakeholders. Now we have a good facilitator. We have introduced a concept. Let's say that the foundations are there, right? So the brainstorming starts, and then everyone can wonder, I want to go to the moon. I want to visit Mars. Et cetera. So you pick up the highest purpose possible, but there's still always an element of reality, which is time frame. So somehow resources are limited, and potentially also time wise, businesses need to align to, let's call it KPIs, even if it's horrible to say, let's say objectives. So in your own experience, and I want to hear from you, Liesl, first, and Chris also afterwards. In this delicate kind of phase, let's call it, of change management, or how to listen, influence, and nudging potential results without forcing a solution to your stakeholders. How do you manage time in your project, Liesl, where obviously information design is at the core of your project? And with Chris instead, I would love to know more about the actual tech implementation side, if possible. Liesl, you kick off.
It's so hard, Marco, when people don't just accept that what you say is the truth and do what you say. You're going to edit that out, right? No. So time is a very real constraint. We also have to deal with tech constraints on our projects sometimes. We have to deal with all kinds of constraints. And our view on constraints is that they make you even more creative, and that we try and embrace them as much as we can to drive that creativity. So from a time management perspective, I think we try, it sounds counterintuitive, right? But we try and allocate as much time as we can to planning and structuring and then approving, getting sign off. The less time we have, the more crucial that planning phase is. If we go straight into creating or straight into drafting, we always find that we have to go back. Something is not working. There was something you didn't think of. Go back, go back, go back. And so I think when we cut up the time that we have available, we've got to spend as much as we can, like 50% at least on planning and working it out and doing the ugly work. Then we can go into drafting and doing all of our wonderful information design stuff. But yeah, the planning stuff is crucial. And you mentioned change management. I think that's something that has to be done right throughout the project. So that's part of the stakeholder analysis. Like, I don't know if this is if everybody has this experience, but with us, we're often called in to organizations to work on their own legal documents, whether it's B2B or B2C stuff, and someone in that organization generally was involved in creating those documents and might feel a little bit defensive. Chris, I see you laughing. You've had this experience, right? And now they're bringing in consultants. External people are going to tell us how to do our job. And there's resistance. So you have to get them on board and you have to really take them along with you, explain your reasoning. We have to do a lot of work to show before and after. Why did you change something? Where has it gone? What's happened to it? This is no longer going to be part of the contract because we're going to build it into the process. It's going to be part of the user's journey online. It's not going to be written down. So that takes a lot of time, but it's got to happen throughout the process as well. Handholding.
Yeah, and I think if you flip it towards the tech side, I would still agree that one of the most important phases, and particularly if there's a time crunch on it, is that planning phase. We've often had situations where people are looking for technology, and I mean, I think last year the whole race around the whole AI topic, people were literally looking to just buy and implement immediately. Like there was not much of the planning, the understanding. Just take a breath and think about this before we just dive head first into it. Make sure we know what's happening. I think that was something that ultimately will really help you have more success on the back end of when you do come towards implementing the technology. If it's been planned out properly, etc., you're going to have a much better opportunity to be successful in the long run. I think when it comes looking towards that, how do you get everyone involved in the process, etc. I watched a really interesting webinar last week. So I guess it'll be a couple more weeks after this, but I watched a really interesting webinar around building a culture of innovation within a law firm. And one of the things that I found really interesting there is we often talk about, we need to get everybody engaged in the process. But you're fighting those who lean out. You're making your life more difficult trying to force them in. Right. So if you spend your time and focus on those people who lean in, by becoming successful with them, that becomes contagious. Those who pushed away or pushed back, they either will see everyone else's success and go, oh, I want that, the old FOMO conversation, or it just becomes the new norm and they get on with it. This is how things are done now and you have to adapt. And I think that's where it also is really important to focus on the people that want to make the change and give them the best platform possible, because they can sometimes be a little ignored or not fully heard, and they could be a catalyst to help you drive that change.
Finding your champions.
They go a long way. Make sure that they know that they're the champions, right? It's not your success, it's theirs.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, I think that and I don't want to turn this into a negative conversation, but I think that one important thing to understand when we're having this discussion is also to understand what would be the scenario if you don't manage to do this, right? If you don't manage to plan and design and plan the structure the entire process from the start, and if you don't get the right people on board or ensure that those that are your champions feel and understand that they are, and that you focus on the ones that are actually willing to make that change. So maybe we can create an adverse scenario where we, as I said, not to make this a negative narrative, but to stress, I think, why it is so important to do this in the first place. So looking back again at both of you, the information design, legal design point of view, the technology implementation and processes around that perspective. What if we don't manage to do this, right? What scenario will we be looking at in practice?
Lisa. One of my favorite exercises to do with a project is reverse brainstorming. So we start by asking, how might we make this worse? How might we make this process even worse for the customer, but also for the lawyers who have to work with the agreements, and also for the call center agents or the customer service guys who have to deal with the calls and the customers? How might we make it worse for them? And that's always a fun way to start a project. It's strange how it's easier to go to the negative than it is to come up with a positive.
Definitely. I also feel like I'm always the one that's doing that in this show.
But from an information design perspective, right? So information design and user experience design kind of go hand in hand. If we make it worse for people, if we don't address the real problem, because often, it's a joke about how we know our jobs are safe from AI. Customers don't know which questions to ask, right? They don't know what the real problem is. And so they'll come to you and go, make this contract better. But they don't ask, do we still need this agreement? Why are we using it? Why does it even exist? They don't ask, what are the implications for the relationship with the customer? And if we make it worse, we start excluding people and alienating people and cutting off their access to services or to justice or to, that sounds very dramatic, but it's true. So we start cutting people off and that's probably the worst thing that can happen. Your customers might not complain to you. They might just never come back.
Yeah, that's even more painful.
Yeah,
that's reality check, isn't it?
I think one of the things for me is I view innovation. If we talk specifically around legal innovation, right? There's a couple key pillars to it, and I see the legal tech, legal design, and legal ops all being three very crucial players in innovation as a whole. Right, whether it is from a contract perspective, making legal information more consumable and easier to access, right, or whether it's looking at various processes and going, how do we simplify this? Do we still need this, etc.? Asking all those questions, and tech often comes towards the end of it, right? We figure out the process, we've got the right people involved. How do we just enhance them now with technology? If you look at it all under the kind of the banner of innovation, in the world we live in today, everything is digital, right? So to stick on this on the tech side, everything is digital. Whether it's finding love or getting your bank statements, you used to stand forever in a queue at the bank on a Saturday waiting to get a simple bank statement. Now you can access that through an application. That is a movement that is happening, whether we like it or not. So I think the downside is if you don't get on the train of innovation, there's not a lot of longevity necessarily for your business. I think that's the real scary side is I was reading a statistic, for instance, I think it was in the early 50s, a business had a life expectancy of around 75 years. Whereas if you look towards the early 2010s, that same life expectancy was down to 15 years already. That is getting shorter and shorter. And innovation is become the main driver for these businesses to grow, right? It's the economies of scale. That I did a post on this the other day on LinkedIn. The too big to fail or those businesses, they are struggling. Look at the Blockbuster, for instance, right? And the whole Netflix conversation. Also been struggling to innovate now because it's become even more rapid paced. Disney, all these other ones, they've taken over the market. So it's becoming even more difficult to constantly differentiate yourself and deliver the services. So I think if we look at it under that whole banner, it's quite scary what could happen if we don't do this properly. And I don't want to be like fear mongering because that's not the goal here, but it's a necessity for you as a business to have innovation as a strategic part of your success plan. Mm-hmm. If it is not, for me, you're planning to fail. One of the other things I wanted to just quickly add on with the, what I was talking about, where kind of a lot of this change ultimately comes and what drives a lot of the adoption and ultimately ROI, where it comes from this sort of client demand. And I think it was actually was last year was one of the first times where we genuinely saw off the back of AI, ChatGPT, and people using it in their personal lives, people turned around and expected businesses to deliver those services. It wasn't a question of anymore of like, oh, we would like this. It's no, this is what we expect. And that forced a lot of getting outside of legal as a whole, it forced a lot of organizations to take a genuine look at these kind of technologies, and rather than speaking about them or using them in very unimpactful ways, they literally had to look at it as how are these addressing the core of their businesses. And that it goes back to it that as if we all kind of take our hats off and we just go to just we all everyday people, it comes down to us to demand that change, because complacent industries will be becoming complacent in your traditional industries. You get stuck like that, and you might not even be fully aware that you're not doing it. So it's also on us as the people to say, hey, we expect this change for you, and this is what's happening. So it's a two-way street, right? We can't just expect organizations to just improve and involve us in their improvements. We also need to be proactively out there and asking for and expecting it, and how can we help you do it better?
We'll follow up on this. I think this is a really interesting topic. We could talk about it for another hour, but let's leave it at that for today. See you in the next episode. No, thank you both so much for joining. Just to really wrap up the episode, it was a real pleasure to have you on board. I almost forgot that we were recording an episode, so it was really, really nice. I hope you guys enjoyed as well, and Marco, of course, also thanks once.
Thank you so much, guys. I'm very proud and happy to have you here. And it was a fantastic discussion. I knew it.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you very much, guys. Until the next one.
Until the next one.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Law of Tech podcast. If you want to make sure you keep up to date with the show and never miss out on an episode, be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and follow the Law of Tech on social media. If you enjoyed the show, please give it a rating or review, as it helps others discover the show. And don't forget to share it with your network. For now, have a great day, and I'll see you in the next episode of the Law of Tech podcast. We'll be right back.